Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey y'all, it's Brittany, and this is For Colored Nerds, the weekly show where we peel back the layers of Black culture that we rarely discuss in mixed company. This week, Eric and I chatted with Maya Cade, the creator of the Black Film Archive. We got into why she started the collection, what it means to be a Black film, and how looking into our cinematic past may have the answers we've been seeking in the present. Let's get into it.
All right. So first, before we do this, I think it's the first time we actually really get to do this, and probably everybody else is gonna feel very annoyed. But we have a fellow Howard alum on the call.
Yay!
Gotta celebrate. Shout out HU. You know, we won't be.
You know
be, exactly. You know, y'all can't see us, but we doing. There's a little hand thing. Everybody be doing. I'm doing the hand thing. But no, seriously, Maya, welcome. Welcome. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell people a bit about you real quick. You tell me if I got it right. You are an audience development strategist at the Criterion Collection. And if for folks who mm-hmm. might not know, the Criterion Collection is a media company that has committed itself to licensing, restoring, and distributing important and classic and contemporary films. We're going to get to the good stuff in a second. There's something else. but before we get there, could you just tell us a little bit about what you do at Criterion?
Yeah, sure. At Criterion, I manage social strategy and email strategy. So anything from what's the best way to get this to our audience kind of questions to how do we reach a new audience? So all of those things across is what I do and the support of my wonderful colleagues. So yeah.
Amazing.
Awesome. So we invited you here today, actually not necessarily to talk about that. It's very relevant context and experience. But I invited you here to talk about a project you did in your off time. You know, and it seems like you have been working pretty furiously to create this, what for me felt like almost like a singular gem of a catalog.
Literally.
The Black Film Archive. Please tell us, what is the Black Film Archive?
Yeah, Black Film Archive is a living register of Black films from 1915 to 1979. And something that just clicked in my head when you said singular, something I really want to stress is I don't think anything is a singular vision. Mm-hmm. Not really. It can't be. Like, I think Black Film Archive is possible because of the work of Black film scholars. It's possible for the people who care deeply about Black films, the people who've written deeply about it, who, you know, the artists, the creators, all of it, that it's possible because of that work. And my intention with Black Film Archive is really to make Black films accessible. I no longer want to hear people say, oh, but like, we only have this kind of Black film, or we have that kind of Black film. I don't believe it. It's not true. Yes, I do this with Black people in mind as I do everything. So, yeah, that's a little bit about Black Film Archive.
Wait, so why did you decide to start the Black Film Archive?
Yeah, I think last summer there were all these conversations, and I'm referring to the Black Lives Matter protests summer. Mm-hmm. Last summer now sounds confusing. But last summer, there were, yes.
2020 summer, that should ring a bell. Just one or two.
And I have a terrible sense of time. So I'm sitting here like, last summer, you know. But last summer, I I really, as these moments, we were having these conversations about what blackness is, and this kind of black trauma in film conversation started percolating more than it had before, because it existed. But this idea of our blackness on screen is so limited. And I kept having these conversations with my friends, and I'm like, I see this wealth of black representation, if you will, in black films past, that I'm like, the girls aren't seeing it. They're not, it's not clicking for them. And I kind of was just like, okay, Maya, like, I think this is your moment. And that plus black film really sustains me. And I think in a moment where there's just so much, like, I was very isolated. I live alone. You know, I was away from my community. My friends sustained me, but black, what I could reach was black film. And, you know, I invested just all my free time into it, truly. And this is the result of that investment. And I think often about something my grandmother has always told me is just the knowledge that you have isn't really anything until you share it with someone else. And so I'm thinking, okay, I know all of this. These conversations are happening. Let me share this with other people. And what is the best way to share it? It started as a Twitter thread last June. And I was just like, that's not enough. Anyone can list films. BuzzFeed has made a killing off that, right?
Like, absolutely.
For me, I wanted to give that context and make Black Film Archive in its first iteration the kind of place where, you know, everything else I can do expands and people don't get left behind in those conversations that I want to have, which are a little bit more in depth, a little bit more like, what does representation even mean? You know, like all of those, all of those things. I don't want people to feel like I'm having this conversation without them. So,
Just shout out to grandma, because that, you know, it's, you don't know anything until you share it with someone. That's sitting with me a little bit. Okay, so you mentioned, you described something that I think a lot of us experienced. You know, last summer, obviously we were, you know, watching the news. The news is pretty horrible every day. You know, stepping outside, things are extremely volatile, you know, depending upon where you are in the world, in the country. And so a lot of people dove into the streaming, the, you know, the streaming networks. They got some coin, like folks were watching, because we just needed, a lot of times needed an escape. I'm curious, like, at what point did you start to, like, at what point did it go from, I'm diving back into, you know, rewatching kind of old black films that's making me feel good, to, you know, my grandmother has, like, you know, given me this calling where I know a thing, and, you know, I need to really work to share that with the world.
You know, I think I was in lockstep, honestly, because the Twitter thread started June 2020, you know, I often really think about the fact that we don't own anything on Twitter. Twitter can disappear tomorrow. Like all of that, you know, all of the threads and this, that, and the third, like all of that you write on Twitter, you don't really own that. And taking ownership of, not to say I am the Black film scholar, but taking ownership of what it means to build a community offline, you know, not offline because it's still a website, but off someone else's platform was the turning point. That really was why are you teaching someone something on someone else's doorstep when you have your own home you can welcome people into? So that was really the, okay, girl, you need to, you know, build your house brick by brick and open the door. So
I wonder, how do you like, what constitutes a black film?
That's really an essential question, and that's where I started. So I think as I was building this list, I was like, you need a map, you need a framework, you need, you know, you need a guiding point. Hello. So I think that the films listed in Black Film Archive have something significant to say about the black experience. Some films also, you know, have a Black writer, a Black director, it really is a direct response to, okay, like, Blackness is a binary. It's this or that. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that. I've never seen that. Mm. So I'm kind of just like, okay, sis, or whomever. You're just listening to my internal dialogue. It's just kind of like, okay, like, here you go. Here is Shaft alongside Shadows. Mm-hmm. Here are some Black films that you've never heard of. Here is the Blaxploitation movement, where Black people are taking Black representation to their own hands. And that is almost mirroring today's Black film boom. And here is also a place where I'm laying the foundation so that eventually on Black Film Archive, when you go to the 1970s, it's going to have this paragraph about what happened in the 1970s, what happened in Black film in the 1960s. Why is this important to you? What kind of films are, you know, the film of the day, the representation of the day? But also, I am hoping that people stop thinking of representation as like the most important thing for a film. To me, and I know, this might sound like a contradiction to people, but I promise you it's not. Representation is important. Yes, we can all agree.
I think so.
But it's not everything that a film should have.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There's some movies where we are there. They are not great.
not too much beyond that.
Yeah, we're
you know
we're
what
there.
I mean? It's the minimum you can ask. Mm. Like, and also when the conversation begins and ends with representation, like, you get film.
We can say some folks if we need to. You know?
This is a safe space. Other people will eventually be led into it, but
yeah, but
you get films that just see Blackness as such a flat thing because the price to admission was just, oh, Black people are in this.
Yeah,
we need to ask for more. Like, do I want a film that just says, this is a Black queer film because there are Black queer characters, but it has nothing significant to say about Blackness or queerness? Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, that was my little tangent.
No, I mean, it's such a great point. Like, and it's one of those things, like, you kind of, I feel like that's why this question is always kind of wrestled with. Because, mm-hmm. you know, for there are a lot of people where representation is enough. You know, like, I feel like they feel starved. And, like, you know, the reality is, like, we a lot of times we've barely been in film and, like, had access to opportunities behind the camera. And so for a lot of people, that does make a difference. But, you know, I think when you are trying to assess, like, okay, what does Black film mean to us? You need more than just our existence in Black film to be able to answer the question. So, like, yeah, that tracks for me.
Also, too, it's like, if you have very, like, even representation behind the camera is very important. But additionally, not every film made by a Black person actually is meant to say something important about Black people.
Yeah.
I don't want to name names because I don't want anybody to say that I'm misreading their work, but there are some people.
I'm nodding.
You know, yes. There are some people who make movies, who are Black, but make movies that aren't in any real way about Black people, which is their choice. I'm not saying that they have to do it, but it's like, I mean, good for them that they're working and they're making what they want to make. But when I think about canon, if we keep that as the only definition, then that leaves out all of these. It leaves The Color Purple out of the mix. It leaves Boomerang out of the mix.
Oh, yes.
It leaves a bunch of films out of the mix that actually are, you know, things that sort of, like, contribute to our cultural shorthand in a way that maybe, like, some other films that are made by Black people but not actually about Black people might not be.
Mm-hmm. I think something else I wrestle with all the time is that Black people can be agents of white supremacy, mm-hmm. and their films are a manifestation of that.
Doo-doo.
Right?
Doo-doo. I mean, you said all there was to say.
You showed up today.
So I'm sitting, so when I'm like, you're talking, I'm like, yep, because I think it's important to have those conversations too. Like, mm-hmm. I think every film's a miracle. Yes. It takes, and especially by a Black person, mm-hmm. it's a miracle. Yeah. And I respect the artistry of getting films done mm-hmm. deeply, deeply. But I also understand that people bring their whole selves into filmmaking, and no one is above critique. And that's why Twitter conversations are becoming very flat. Yeah. Because we're all talking about film as if it's not above critique. As if, do you think that I would critique something if I didn't want it to be better? That if I didn't love or invest myself into it?
Yeah.
Why would I be talking about a film if I, and you know, and wrestling with the ideas that it presents, if I didn't want the filmmaker to do better next time, if I didn't believe they had the potential to do so?
If you didn't respect them and you didn't have some hope for them, then you wouldn't waste your time.
Correct. And when we can't acknowledge that in digital spaces, conversations are flat. They're not worth having.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 18 years from tonight, Grant Gill will become a comedy legend when he totally kills it at his improv class's graduation performance. Knees will be slapped. Hilarity will ensue. That's why he's already keeping himself in shape and razor sharp today with wellness tips and tools from AARP to help make sure his health lives as long as he does. Because the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/healthyliving.
You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
Want to make Mom's Day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat Mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
I'm wondering, why does the archive begin at 1915 and stop at 1979?
1915 is just the current oldest Black film streaming. Mm-hmm. They're films from 1890 that just aren't streaming or before 1915. Mm-hmm. 1979 is the stopping point for a lot of reasons. I think, you know, in 1978, The Wiz was a financial failure.
Which is hard to process in hindsight because of what it means. But yeah,
mm-hmm. This is a film. I think this is the most expensive picture at the time. You might have to fact check me on that. But major Hollywood studios used it as a reason to stop investing in Black cinema. They said, okay, we got Motown, we got Diana Ross, we got Michael Jackson, we got, you know, all these people, and Black people didn't show up. They used it as that reasoning and also a measure of white appetite for Blackness. As the exploitation era is coming to an end, and there's now trying to be different ideas of what black and sunscreen looks like from studios, studio investment itself, they're saying, oh, the girls don't want this, but we're gonna call it a day. So that's really why it's 1979. And also because I started thinking about 1980s and the films that are available in the 1980s, a lot of people know. Mm. a lot of people are intimately familiar with. And also the 1980s ushers in a different kind of era of black cinema. Yeah. You have the independent black feature coming into its own. Mm-hmm. You have the LA Rebellion in California that shapes ideas of blackness just differently. Not that those don't exist previously in what the film's listed, but the LA Rebellion, that's kind of its own thing that, and many of those films aren't available to stream. And then the later 80s, you also have, you know, Do the Right Thing and a lot of films that we all know and love and play on constant rotation in BT. so it just kind of felt like a natural stopping point in all of those ways.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, what was your favorite part of kind of putting this together?
Like, I had many internal debates about very granular level things. Mm-hmm. Like, the first question being, what does the resource I want to build look like? Mm. How does that resource make people feel? Are their feelings supposed to be a guide? Mm. How do these films relate to each other on screen? Mm. And how should that look?
I just, something you, like you saying that actually connected that, like, right, yeah, so much of that is an emotional, like, mm-hmm. deep thing.
But you're also like, you are engaging and thinking about that from the point of view of the consumer, like from the person who's going to be actually like from the audience, mm-hmm. and not in the way that like a streaming platform would, where it's like they get to know the audience intimately so that they can present them through an algorithm or whatever, they can present them the content that they want to direct them toward. You mm-hmm. are kind of creating a space where the audience can be self-directed in finding what they want to find. And also too, even I think about like the taxonomy that you use, like blaxploitation is its own category.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because it is a specific type of film. I think that, how do I put it? Sometimes I get the sense that mainstream streaming platforms or even like, I don't know, like at like the like in real life level, like maybe sometimes programmers or different like film preservation or, you know, whatever, theaters and things like that, that play like older movies and stuff like that. Sometimes I think people would even shy away from a category like that, from blaxploitation, mm-hmm. because they might think it's inappropriate or racist. You know, sometimes like white people think anything with black in it.
Well, I think racist. Overcorrection is racism, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Say more about that.
When you say, I can't do something because I don't want to upset imaginary blackness, you're overcorrecting.
Yeah.
And that's a racist instinct. But I think that curators, though, take a step back. They have curating for, if you're at a film, if you're at a theater or a film institution, mm-hmm. they have a lot of interest to speak to. Same thing with streaming. Mm-hmm. And black people aren't always the first interest, right?
Mm-hmm. Clearly.
But I would I hope on my site it's clear that this is only for black people. White people can see it, they can enjoy it, sure. It's not what you in mind.
Yeah.
That's so
we work by that ethos.
It's literally feels very comfortable, like a warm blanket. You
know, and I think it's a self-directed tour. I think it has to be, right? Okay. So often we're told what blackness is, what it will be, what it can be, what it has been. But we as in black people have intimate relationships with blackness. And I think you are the guiding, you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is I do things with trust that people know how to do for themselves. And that's the place I start. That's the genesis for me. That's I'm not trying to force feed you anything. I trust you to intake things as you need to, as you will, as you want to. I'm giving you the information. I think, you know, as this becomes bigger, things will change, but that will remain true. You know, I think I have really big plans for the site. Like, this is genuinely iteration one. There are a lot of things ahead, but I think that will certainly remain true. Truly,
I'll be honest. Even for me, you know, like, I was really hyped when I saw. I was like, "Whoa, this is awesome!" Because I, you know, like I said before, I'm on the struggle daily, and you know, and so like, kind of going into the site and browsing the site, I just kind of real. I was just like, "Wow, this is like such a cool experience." Because like, there was not. I kind of usually when you're browsing through the, you know, through that A to Z, there's a lot of like, no. But I wanted to click into each one. You know, like, mm-hmm. I was so thirsty that I was like, fuck, everything is here. And I'm seeing things like, you know, that I was really into, and you get just such a kind of great cross-section of, you know, like, you know, movies, like, you know, and you might see a gem, you know, like, I found the movie Ali Fear Eats the Soul on, mm-hmm. I think it was on Netflix or something. And I remember seeing that mm-hmm. and just watching it and being like, you know, like, whoa. But that was
a movie.
Yeah, amazing movie. Amazing movie. But like, on your website, I felt like every row was just all Ali Fear Eats the Soul. Everything was a gem.
No, like, everything was like a discovery of that level where it's just like, oh, if it like the way it kind of feels. And like, okay, so like, you know, we all went to Howard. I went to Howard. My degree is in film. And so I was like, steady just watching movies all the time, talking about movies all the time. Halle Green was my professor. This was my life when I was young. And so I have, like, you know, there's a lot of books that I've read, like interviews with all these different filmmakers and stuff like that. Like, it's something that I care a lot about and something that I try to know a lot about. And still browsing your site felt like so many of the movies felt like doors to like a new portal of like a different way of looking at life.
Oh my God.
That I couldn't believe that I had been without. Like, I don't know. I think for all of us, I'm sure you feel the same way, Eric, that like, if you really like to love movies is to like is to love having your, like, your, like, it just opens up a different pathway for yeah. how you can see the world. And to have that happen so consistently looking at your site. And also, Eric and I were talking about this earlier. Like, it's such a, not to say that it was simple or uncomplicated to make. We knew that before we spoke to you. And obviously, we know yeah. that having spoken to you now. But like, it's a very simple idea. Like, it's something, it's because it's something that should already, like it's a thing, it's a resource that like I wish I had had already in my life. Like, when I was 19 and I was in school. I mean, ultimately, I ended up like not going into the profession for a variety of reasons, recession being one of them. But also, like, it was so difficult for me when I was younger to like be able to marry the ideas of being like Black woman and filmmaker. Because for people who think that I'm very young, this was before like Issa Rae and Ava DuVernay. Like, I think I Will Follow came out when I was in college, and I saw that. But it was so cool to be able to look through this, like, just browse through the website and just see, it was like a total, just whole worlds, just scrolling past rows and rows and rows of whole worlds that I didn't even know were possible. Oh, and they already happened a long time ago.
That's all it's about, right? Like, that's the feeling I was really hoping for.
So many of our film greats are, especially the early ones, are kind of appreciated or celebrated in hindsight. You know, mm-hmm. I think about names like Kathleen Collins, maybe, you know, mm-hmm. Charles Burnett. And not to say there hasn't been any scholarship or celebration of their work. But it I feel like it typically happens as a retrospective. It typically is somewhat removed from the height of when they might have been creating. I guess I'm curious, like, in what ways do you see, like, Black Film Archive as highlighting or recontextualizing, and I know, like, both of those words, you know, can mean a lot, but I'm curious, what way do you see Black Film Archive as highlighting or recontextualizing the legacies, you know, of certain actors or filmmakers, you know, from our history?
Yeah, that's a question I'm actually wrestling with now, because something I'm working on is grouping actors and directors to have their own pages. So I'm building out those pages, and I'm pondering, okay, what do I want to say about these people, right? Like, I think like very hard about all of this, because every word on the site is written by me. And so, I mean, naturally the answer is yes, right? Like, I think when people's work is splintered across streamers, it's hard to really measure their impact, right? Mm. If you like see an Oscar Michaud film on Canopy and then you see one on Tubi, you're not really thinking about the weight of his work. Or even people who have two works, like Kathleen Collins, as you mentioned. Mm. Her short life birth, one of the most influential independent Black films ever. Mm-hmm. And so I think that question is to be answered, though, from my opinion. Like, I think that's one that's evolving to me. I don't think there is a concrete answer to the impact that Black Film Archive can have on the reexamination of the weights of these people. Like, I think that's something that's ongoing. My hope is is really what I can answer, which is that you see the people here and you understand, or you begin to understand, that they made this with you in mind, that they, you know, many of them made this with you in mind. They cared about you. And I think so often a lot of these conversations about Black artists is the assumption that they did this to make, or that this was only consumption, commodified, that this is only being commodified. Mm-hmm. But for many of the early pioneers, this couldn't have been a commodification. This is everything that they had. They put into this work. And I think our conversations about the fullness of Blackness on screen exists because they dared to do so. So that's my short story.
No, I mean, honestly, for me, like, going through and seeing like a couple of Spencer Williams films,
Spencer,
I did not realize like he played Andy. Of Amos and Andy, I did not realize that he had a career as a filmmaker and a director after that.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I mean, you know, I did some research, which I was spurred to do because I saw all of this on the Black Film Archive. I saw that there was like an effort to recontextualize his films, like, you know, 20, 30 years ago. But I could just say, even for me personally, what you're kind of doing with this is like creating a pathway for audiences to discover these films and to engage in different people's, I guess, like, bodies of work. And, like, that feels significant. And I wonder, like, what's your hope for what people take away from being exposed to so much film history that's flown under the radar?
Maybe I'm being too humble. My hope.
Talk your shit. The price has went up. Exactly. The price has changed.
Yesterday's price is not today's price.
Today's price, period. Okay. Exactly. What I hope people take away is genuinely, we cannot have flat conversations about what Blackness is. There's just no way that can still exist. It can't. It's done. Please throw it away. I don't want to hear it. I will not be party to it. Don't tag me. Don't at me. Like, I have no comment. Like, I just know, but really, I think that it's time for a new conversation to start. Mm-hmm. And it's time for that conversation to have the history of Black film in it. When we have conversations devoid of history, they're circular. They can't go anywhere because Black film's future, like the past really is going to be the thing that carves out the future, right? When we have a full understanding of the past, the future seems so much brighter. You know what I mean? And so what I'm really hoping people take away at the minimum is what you're hoping to do might have been done before. And if you take a moment to look at the past, you may see that you can have inspiration to do a new thing, to dream a little bit bigger, have your dream include a little bit more people. Well, I said that I would leave y'all with a fact about me that many people don't know. Are you ready?
Yes.
Are you buckled up?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
When I was 7 or 8, I was in a little film called Big Mama's House 2.
Are you serious?
Shut up.
Hey, what?
You were in Big Mama's House 2?
They shot it in New Orleans. There's a scene, it's the opening scene, and it talks about fire safety. I'm about to embarrass myself.
I'm being straight up with you. We're going to cut this in.
We
gonna
will cut absolutely it in. Find this.
We
do
are
you have a
about
line?
To do that. Yeah.
You can see a little me in a pink shirt. I'll help you. I'll make it easier for you to find. A little me in a pink shirt, little glasses. Yeah. And in the opening scene, in about, I would say, at 2 minutes and 20 seconds.
Okay. It's about 2 minutes.
I'm trying to think of somewhere when.
What is so the time like, code? If only I knew.
So there's like a fire safety demonstration. Martin Lawrence sets himself on fire. And, ooh, I just revealed my age. Can we cut my age out?
Oh, you
I was
good.
Younger. But I look like a child, so I guess people will have to use their imagination. But anywho, yes, I was younger. I was in the front row of this little fire demonstration. So my history with Black film is obviously...
It's ordained.
It's literally ordained. Seriously. Like, I mean, you were touched by the best. Big Mama's House.
What,
like,
yeah.
What you were never like going to fail.
To walk in your path. You know, to have it always walking in your path. Tell me how to get there.
Maya, I can't thank you so much for giving so much of yourself, not just to the Black Film Archive, but also to us in this moment.
Oh.
I mean, Big Mama's House 2, what a revelation. A revelation.
That was me. And you'll see, like, oh, that's Maya. And it'll be a second. You'll be like, I know her.
I'm sure in the update, Big Mama's House 2, excuse me, will get its own page.
Well, when you expand the Black Film Archive, okay, and you put it out to 2010, and you add Big Mama's House 2, you can include that in the copy.
And I'll include the photo of me.
You have
it as the
please
photo.
Do.
Obviously.
Oh my God,
that'll
thank
be
you.
The gift that you use.
Please
thank
don't
you
get
so
me.
Much, Maya.
We won't.
This was amazing. Seriously,
this is
thank
amazing.
You so
thank
much.
You so much. We're so happy to get to talk to you, and we're so grateful for the work that you're doing. Oh, real quick, tell people how they can support the Black Film Archive,
yes.
Because currently it's both free and self-funded.
Yes, it will always remain free, wherever I go. But you can support the Black Film Archive by subscribing to the Substack. You can donate via PayPal, which is on the Frequently Asked Questions page. You can also support by sharing the word. Like, I don't think all support has to be monetary. Mm-hmm. I am just really thankful for any support people have to offer. You tweet about it. There's a person who tweets about it daily who I say thank you to every day because I am very grateful. but yes, all support is welcome. All support people are able, you know, leave from where you stand kind of thing.
Awesome.
Yeah, but I'm really thankful for you guys. Like, this has been a joyous conversation and my first podcast about the Black Film Archive.
There you go. Yes. But it won't be the last, I can tell.
Won't be the last. Won't be the last. Won't be the last.
For Color Nerds was created by me, Eric Eddings, and Brittany Luce. It's supported by a production team at Stitcher, including producers Alexis Williams, Willis Arnold, and executive producer Camille Stanley. Casey Hofer is our technical director, and Peter Clowney is head of content. Our theme music is by Willie Green. And look, y'all, we love hearing from our listeners. We love y'all so much. So please connect with us and tell us what you thought of this episode. You can reach us on Twitter and Instagram at For Colored Nerds. And never miss an episode by following us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.